You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, I don't know how much help I'm going to be on the Massive Report podcast tonight. I barely got onto Zoom, and I didn't watch most of the Cincinnati game, and I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even know what I'm doing here. My name is Brian Phillips. It's the Massive Report podcast. I love doing this with you guys every week. And this week we have Alex Stanek, Ori Benatar, Patrick Golden joining us because Murph poured, what did he pour on his computer? Just water or?
He claims water.
Did he kill his computer in frustration during the Cincinnati game? It could be. So it's just the four of us to try to work through all this. And it's the entire range of human emotion we've all felt in just a few days. Let's just get the Cincinnati game out of the way first. And as I said at the jump, I didn't watch most of it because that penalty kick was the worst penalty kick call I've ever seen in my life. And the frustration that I've been feeling for these officials this season has been growing and growing and growing. And I blew a tube. And my wife is just like looking at me like, what is wrong with you? And I thought to myself, she's right. I don't need to watch this. I need to go outside. So I turned off the TV and I went for a walk and I never came back to the game. So you guys are going to have to take me through it. And I apologize for not doing my job. I couldn't take it anymore. Does anyone see that PK other than an egregious miscarriage of justice? Am I crazy here? Anybody?
It was unusual. I will say that. They give a lot of latitude to goalkeepers. That was a punch. Maybe if Tarbell gets to the ball, then there's nothing there. But that referee called an interesting game. I found his game management very very unusual. I have a history of being relatively pro. I think that they have a tough job. I think a lot of the referees are pretty good. Ted Uncle is not my favorite pro referee. He actually, I feel, did a good job in the game that he called with the crew a couple weeks back. But yeah, last Wednesday, I felt the game management really got out of hand. The way the game was called was rough, and I really don't understand the penalty there. I can see a lot of the ones that have been called against the crew, but that one was definitely unusual. I will say that wasn't the reason why the crew lost. Frankly, it certainly helped, but you talk about one shot on goal in the first half, and that's because Pedro Sanchez gets tripped in the box and gets a penalty kick, and that's the crew's one shot, and that's in the entire first half. I think that this is a FC Cincinnati team that is in transition, obviously, from being abjectly terrible to just mostly terrible, and they have some ideas. And they're starting to play something that's not just let's put 11 people behind the ball, we were talking a little bit before the recording. Look at how they celebrated a regular season win when they are at the well outside the playoffs, and it's not saving their season. They were up for this because this is the game that they circled that they could. Take something from it because nothing else is coming from this season for FC Cincinnati.
All right, Ori, before I took my mental health break during the Cincinnati game, what I noticed was, and I think that maybe the crew were surprised at how positive Cincinnati was trying to play. Now, the possession was still overwhelmingly the crew, 61-39 at the end of the match, but I felt like I was seeing something different from Cincinnati. They were really trying to get forward.
Definitely.
In their own special way. But I think they kind of caught us off guard, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. And in that first half, you could see Cincinnati. They just looked like a completely different team to what we had seen in the previous three meetings between Columbus and Cincinnati. And the thing that Cincinnati did really well. They passed out of the back tremendously. They got good space on the wings as well to create. And Columbus is Columbus too. They came out with no urgency, and that's something that they were doing wrong over this stretch of games. Maybe not wrong, but just didn't have in the gas tank. They just didn't come out of the gates with urgency. They changed that on Sunday. The first 30 minutes of Sunday against New York City might have been the best 30 minutes we've seen this team play at a start of a game. They were fast out of the gate. They were pushing forward, trying to get a goal. Again, Cincy, we didn't see that. And I do think that there's a lot of factors. The team didn't play well enough, but at the same time, they've been dealing with, you know, COVID tests, false positives, missing training. Caleb Porter mentioned on Sunday that, you know, the last 2 weeks they've gone through a lot with the losing and with the COVID tests, and the fact that they've had days where they've gone to the practice facility, but they couldn't train because of a false positive or a positive test. So you question guys being ready, whether or not, you know, they've trained enough before a game. So that factors in as well. The performance was just not good enough. And in that game, you really missed Darlington Nagbe in midfield, I think, because Fatai Alashe offers more defensive capabilities than Aiden Morris offers defensive capabilities, but he pushes tempo and transitions, I think, better than Alashe. But another game that was poorly officiated. So Columbus just didn't get the luck in having a poorly officiated game, but at the same time, defending on set pieces. Set pieces is this team's kryptonite. They can't score on set pieces, and they can't defend them either.
Well, since this only the audio is going on the website, but I am holding up a tiny piece of tinfoil here in honor of Alex, who had a bizarre theory that the game would, and I'm not saying that there was any sort of untoward motives from the official other than just not being very good at his job. But it was such a flurry of paranoia from you last week, Alex, that I really don't remember exactly everything you said, but it was something about penalty kicks being awarded under questionable circumstances. Did you call for two of them? Do I recall?
I called for two of them. Yeah, I called
so for you're two. You're only half right.
You,
then
you called for three of them, and you said Targon would save one.
Did I?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You said three.
Okay.
Oh, I just want to give you your due. I mean, yeah, you follow. That's the first thing I thought of. Well, that's not the first thing I thought of. The first thing I thought of were new swear words that I coined right there and when it all happened. But then I thought about you, and I'm beginning to think that for once in your life, you're starting to make a little bit of sense, and that scares me.
All I'm saying is, you know, you need to think about, if you want to make sense of Major League Soccer, you need to think of Major League Soccer as a cross between the Premier League and the World Wrestling Federation. That's kind of how Don Garber runs this league. It's part sports and part entertainment, right?
Oh, come on, man.
And I think that you reach a point in a rivalry where it's so one-sided that you have to throw the other team a bone. And so I think there might have been a little bit of that. I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, pro referees will do that. I mean, for sure. But in all seriousness, I think it was a poor game. I think our depleted squad against their depleted squad, it was kind of a coin toss. I think, like, you know, Ori mentioned, the lack of training really hurt. I'm just glad that those Cincy fans got to watch a full Hell Is Real for once instead of leaving in the 60th minute every time. So that was nice for them, I'm sure. I'm not sure if they're making a t-shirt or not, but I hope that they do. Not a great game for the crew. The injuries are really starting to pile up, and you're seeing the team really, really struggle against teams that a full strength squad, you know, it wouldn't be a problem. I'm pretty concerned at this point about what kind of performance we're going to see from this team through the end of the season and potentially into the playoffs if we don't start getting some of these guys back, because it does not look like the Columbus that we saw this summer. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's not the team that we saw this summer. It's a totally different group, and they're having to kind of wing it every week, trying to figure out new formations and new groups of personnel and things like that. It's tough.
Well, the good news is, can we leave Cincinnati behind? Is everybody in agreement that
that's fine with me? There's not much else to say about that game other than it was a bad performance from the crew.
I never want to talk about that game again.
Hopefully they don't play Cincinnati for the rest of this year and we don't see them again until summer of 2021, maybe.
I just want to say one thing. Congratulations to Alex Steck, who prior to this game was the only person involved in the rivalry to have only experienced losses. When she was with the Crew, they lost in the Open Cup, and then she went to Cincy and like lost it. But now she's got to win. So
yeah,
she's an awesome, awesome person. So I'm happy that their social media team actually has something positive to talk about and something for their fans as well. So right. Congratulations to them for finally winning one.
In the grand scheme of things, I suppose it doesn't matter that much. I know Alex and I saw each other briefly on Sunday before the match, and neither one of us were optimistic about how things would go at 6 p.m. on Sunday against NYCFC. Patrick, it was really rather shocking, at least to me anyway, how good they looked. And this was a game where New York came out and played their game. I mean, they play a very physical game. And that's the kind of a match where a beleaguered Columbus Crew could just go out and fold their tent, and they did anything but. It was so impressive, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to that initial game plan and really understanding what they needed to do. I think that you got some energy from some of the rotation that Porter said that they kind of had to do. With Emma Boateng on the and Derek Etienne starting on both wings, Pedro Santos is an excellent defender. That you get that defensive energy high up, and I think it really started from them. And then Artur was in excellent form, and Aiden Morris is a lot of energy. At 19, he still is going to have a rookie mistake here or there, as evidenced by the New York City FC goal. But, you see a lot of energy from him, a lot of on the pitch intelligence, I think, in a lot of cases where he's making the right decision, and he's also willing to try stuff. So mm-hmm. I think if you look at that midfield that they really got involved early to really kind of counterpress New York trying to play through it. And this is where I also call out, I think, that the refereeing helped the Crew. It wasn't necessarily that that there weren't any bad calls. It's just the game management was really to cut down a lot of the persistent fouling or things, the rugged challenges. It was just well managed from that regard that it allowed the Crew to actually play the game that they wanted to. And frankly, getting to the half hour mark, only up 1-0. I feel like it was a little bit of a bad scoreline for the Crew because, they had a couple chances, getting in behind the defense pretty early. I will note that I feel that it was, I think in my game story, I put it as the 3/4 let down. Because after that, New York played their game and they had their chances. And so is it going to be a case where we're going to see the Crew that kind of swooned in early October? Or is that first part of the game the Crew that's going to show up? And I honestly, that question comes down to how quickly and how healthy Darlington Agbi and Lucas Ellerain come back at. Because they're game changers for this team, and missing both of them, it's not that Pedro Santos isn't he's not a playmaker, but he makes things happen there. But he's also valuable on the wing, and if you have to move him around, then you're substituting in somebody else on the wing that isn't giving you the same thing, and it just cascades from there. So I'm really interested to see now that they have a week to get healthy to finally get I think Porter put it four days to install their game plan, what they look like coming to Houston, who's been wobbly since the summer.
We'll get to the Houston game here before we're done, and we also want to talk about a couple of guys who were nicked up, important pieces during the latter stages of the NYC game, and we'll talk about that here in a moment. Ori, the first goal, the Artur goal, was something that I don't recall seeing from this club for a little while, and it was quick ball movement right in front of the goal. It was a true team effort, and I felt like we kind of had them running around chasing their tails a lot like we have defensively lately. That was so great to see. I mean, the entire setup was a thing of beauty, and really kind of opened my eyes that maybe we're suddenly going to turn the corner here.
Yeah, no, definitely. Those first 30 minutes of the first half were fantastic from an offensive perspective, because you saw quick movement, quick transition, high tempo. And it starts in the back line. Afful had a lot of space on that right side.
Yes, he did.
To make those transitions. And also, Derek Etienne, and that's one thing that I've noticed since I've started covering these games in person, it's a lot easier to notice off-ball movement more when you're in person, because you can see the whole field, whereas on television, you just see the ball carrier, right. Don't see a full picture. And one thing I really noticed, especially in that first half, Derek Etienne was so patient waiting for the timing on his runs. And Harrison just timed them to perfection. Etienne was level with the New York City defensive line, and he got in behind the defense a lot. And he had a lot of opportunities to cross to Jossie Zardes in that first half. And like you said, quick passing around for that first goal. You want to see that near and around the box, because when you're slow in the buildup around the box, you allow the defense to organize themselves and basically contain whoever's holding the ball, and it's harder for that passing to be executed. Artur just got the ball, and it fell to him, essentially. So a little bit of luck there, but he slotted it home past Sean Johnson, who for me was New York City's best player in the game. Sean Johnson made a lot of big saves. Andrew Tarbell did too, so both goalkeepers performed very well. And the midfield did a tremendous job to transition into those attacks, because Artur was the man of the match, scoring that goal, and he played well defensively and offensively. And Aiden Morris, once again, just performed spectacularly, the 18-year-old kid. I remember one instance where he's nowhere near the ball. It's in the midfield line. New York City's trying to press on a counter. He runs to get the ball on a great sliding challenge. He's got a guy right next to him. He wins the ball. He's about to fall, keeps his balance, and is just running up field. And that's what you want to see in a young kid. You want to see in any player. You want the ball. He wants the ball. He wants to win it back. And then he wants to push up the tempo. And once again, he puts in another fantastic performance, and he played a full 90 minutes. So he played really, really well. The only thing is that for Columbus, out of the gates fast in the first half, not as much in the second half. They just had themselves an easy tap in for Pedro Santos to score early in that second half, just winning the ball off of some bad passing from New York City. So you want to be able to see both halves where Columbus can start off quickly, because during the winless run, it was not a very good first half, came out better in the second half. And then in this game against New York City, it was the opposite. So if they can put the full puzzle together, maybe we can see the team that we saw at MLS's back in Florida that was just dominant. Because, you know, now that we're getting to the end of the season, 5 games left in the regular season, MLS's back is probably the best we've seen this team play.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alex, I think that NYC, and Patrick mentioned this, that the way the game was being officiated was certainly not to their advantage. And they showed that perhaps they're a team that doesn't know how to play from behind and doesn't know how to transition out of it. They're going to be missing 2 players in their next match because of yellow card accumulations. This has become a problem for them. They didn't seem to be able to adjust out of it. And I don't know. I look at them as a rival. I look forward to playing them. And I felt really good about the win. I realized that perhaps the energy was a little lacking there in the second half, as Ori mentioned. But all in all, I mean, if I had to give it a grade, especially in the context of how we played lately, I'd say 8 out of 10. How about you?
You know, I don't know. I think I was a little bit more concerned about aspects of the game. Once we went up 2-1, to me, I said this on Twitter, I was getting very strong, you know, Berhalter crew kind of hanging on to a lead vibes from that team. We were giving a lot of possession to New York. We were kind of sitting deeper. We were letting them dictate the play. And I was very concerned that, you know, are we going to concede? We've made a couple bad mistakes. You know, I was worried that maybe another one of those was on the way. I think the difference between this team and the teams that maybe we've seen under Greg Berhalter is Jonathan Mensah has really adapted fully to this league. And he is one of the best center backs, bar none, on, you know, in this country. He is just a phenom, and you put him in there and he just makes those chances go away. Mm-hmm. You know, NYCFC still had a couple decent chances. But you know, he is such a rock, in that central defense that, you know, I was never super concerned about it, but I thought they looked pretty lethargic as that game kind of went on. And then again, we got that third goal and, you know, all of that, you know, kind of went out the window and New York kind of knew they were done at that point. But there was a period of time in that second half where I was a little bit worried, and I think a better team than New York might have equalized, and that's a little bit concerning as we start to look towards the end of the season. But again, we are really shorthanded right now, so the fact that they're, you know, winning these scrappy games that, you know, could go either way, that's a positive. So I think all in all, you know, you take it.
Kind of makes you think, to your point, back to the Toronto loss, the most recent match with them, where we played so great in the first half, and then we all know how that went. So maybe playing a better team, we would have had a different result. But I felt like, all in all, the grit was there that we haven't seen. And I was really excited to see that. And I felt like New York let Awful kill them, whereas Awful has really killed us lately. And he was allowed to be the best Harrison Awful that he could be in that particular match. He was such a difference maker, I think. Well, it was an important result. Then later on in the evening, the Crew found out that they had qualified for the playoffs with the Atlanta-Toronto result. Am I correct in that, Patrick, or did I screw that up?
Yeah, they got into the playoffs. Given that 10 teams from the East make it, it was only a matter of time given the solid track right. record up through the season. But, yeah, they only needed a tie out of that game, and Toronto won from a Piatti goal in the 89th minute. So, you know, Columbus is in the third spot in the Eastern Conference. I think that as we look at what is going to happen as the season comes to its end, because, you know, the games are piling up again fast and furious because they're cramming them in every which way. It's a good thing to have that taken care of, but the good the next best thing is to get first or second so that you get those play-in games rather than facing off. You get to that bottom of the conference, because right now, as it stands, it would be a repeat at the Fairgrounds against New York City FC. And, you know, that's a dangerous first-round matchup. So I think as we look at the rest of the regular season, it's really trying to get that tune-up so that you have the players coming back that make the difference in midfield. Darlington Nagbe and Lucas Ellerayon and, you know, Ellerayon, because, you know, he's, again, a standout in between the pipes. But it's also making sure that everybody's firing, because – you know, passing Philadelphia. I don't know if Toronto is catchable for. I'm sorry, we're not calling it Supporter Shield anymore, are we? It's regular season.
Yeah, we'll get to that before we're done. Somebody's gonna have to explain that whole thing to me. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
But you know, getting to that second spot would be really good, because then you have better matchups. You're really down at the bottom end of that conference, and those games are a little bit easier. You definitely want the home game, but you'd like to be facing those play-in games of the tired teams who played in the middle of the week, and then getting some home field advantage.
Well, we'll see. Still some time to make up points, but it was rather alarming how fast we dropped from first to now third, and that Orlando game, which is so important, has been rescheduled for November 4th down there. That's going to be a must-win. Let's go through the list before we look ahead to Houston, because Artur wanted to be removed from the match, but the knock he took was so late that he just kind of stayed out there dragging his leg around. And it's so hard to know anything about injuries. What do we know, Ori? Patrick, I know that you're closer to the team than Alex and I. Do we know anything about the knock that Artur took?
Not yet. We do know Caleb did tell us that from his hunch that the Pedro Santos injury wasn't too serious.
Okay, because that was another one that was
potential minor hip thing, but we will find out more likely on Thursday when we talk to Caleb and the players. My expectation, if we're, you know, just taking a educated guess, would be that at the very least, maybe Darlington Nagbe is back for the Houston game or for the DC game. I would expect Darlington Nagbe at the very least to be back for one of the last two October games.
Okay.
And then we'll have to see about Lucas Zelrayan, because you got to play three games in the first 8 days of November now, because they had to put the Orlando game on the 4th on that Wednesday. So it'll be interesting to see if we see him return before a playoff match. But one thing that's pretty crazy about this MLS season, the first four teams that clinched the playoffs are all from the Eastern Conference in Toronto, Philly, Columbus, and Orlando. Not one team has clinched from the West. And that's pretty interesting considering everybody talks about, well, not everybody, but a good portion of people who follow the league talk about the power of the West with Seattle and Portland and the Los Angeles clubs, you know, upcoming teams like Minnesota and Kansas City. But the East is far and away the better conference this year, considering that the top four teams in the East all have more points than the top two teams in the West in Seattle and Portland, who are sitting on 31. So it's pretty interesting to see that that is the case. Obviously, Columbus has got that game in hand that will be played on that Wednesday against Orlando. But injury-wise, I think we'll probably see Pedro back for the Houston game based on the hunch of Caleb Porter and what he told us based on what he saw. Artur, we'll have to see. We'll have to ask. He did want to sub at the very end of stoppage time, but because they had used their three periods for substitutions, he wasn't able to come out. So we'll see, but we'll find out more on Thursday.
Okay. And that goes for Room, too. I still think back to his injury and how it didn't seem to be anything, but obviously it's something. Huh, Patrick?
Yeah, it's. I think they said it was a knee injury, and I think this is a case where they're trying to take it as gentle as possible, knowing that they have somebody like Tarbell who has put in this week. It was a team of the week performance, yeah. So they have a understudy that they can rely on maybe more than other teams can. So it's not a case where you have to really rush Room back. Room will give you a lot more work with the feet. I think he's a little bit more comfortable than Tarbell is. And so that would be a benefit of him returning. It gives you another option about how the team can play. But I think that Alex's concern earlier about how this team gets healthy, I think that they're getting healthy at the right time. Darlington's on his way back. I was a little surprised that he might not make an appearance in the expanded 18 this week. But I would be, you know, like Ori, I would be surprised if he's not featuring at some point against Houston. I wouldn't be surprised if Room also makes a return, getting them in the first of the three and eight, because you have that that spot between going to DC on that Wednesday following. So I think this is a case where as you get players back, you want to make sure that you can rotate people in and out, because the grind is only going to get more challenging with, what is it, five games between now and November 8th, which is 3 weeks away.
Well, this coming Saturday, we're down in Houston. And, there are so many teams in this league now that, especially when they're out in the Western Conference, we lose track. They have had a rough go of it. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. They did earn a draw against a pretty good Minnesota United team this past Sunday. But 3-1 loss to Nashville. 1-0 loss to Miami. They did beat the FC Dallas. I like that team. So they got one there and lost to Kansas City. In September, the real eyebrow raiser is a 4-0 loss on September 23rd to Chicago Fire. This is a team that we ought to handle pretty handily, huh, Alex?
I mean, I hope so. The weird thing about this league right now is there's so many weird variables. One of my all-time favorite Crew B players is on Houston, Nico Hansen.
Oh, yeah.
Umbop's down there, so big fan of that. But in general, I mean, they're kind of a mediocre team. They've got 20 points on the season. They're not doing anything spectacular. You know, their results in the last few games are mediocre as well. So I think we should be able to get the result down there. But you never know. This crew team is so weird right now just because of so many players who are kind of either carrying minor injuries or out with major injuries. It's really hard to predict, but I feel better about this game than I have about some of the other games. So optimistic.
Ori, have you had a chance to see Houston at all? The only times I've seen them play was during the tournament when I saw parts of matches they played there. They seemed to have trouble defensively.
Yeah, no, this is a team that does have trouble defensively. They have conceded 32 goals this year and scored 27. So in all likelihood, we should see a game with some goals. I don't expect a 0-0 draw, but I think the reason to be so optimistic from a crew perspective for this game is not just the fact that you're playing against a team that's not very good, but you're probably going to be getting guys back that can play some minutes like Nagby, Room. Porter did say on Sunday that he said we're going to start getting guys back, and they actually have a full week of rest, which is something this team hasn't had in a very long time. We're talking maybe a full month, because sure, they had a week without playing a game between Montreal and Cincinnati, but you have to think of all the stuff that was going on in between. They get two positive COVID tests on Friday. They can't train. There's all this stuff going on. It's not really a time for you to just get some actual rest, get your training going. Whereas this time they actually have like a normal week of preparation where they can train throughout the week, get their day off on Friday, and then go to Houston on Saturday in the morning, play the game, and then head back that evening. And then they have to start getting ready for, you know, a busy next four games to end the season. So I think that those are the two big reasons to be really optimistic about this game. The fact that Houston's not very good, they get a full week to rest, and they're getting some guys back as well. So it should be a victory. I wonder if Houston will implement some trash can oriented chance or ways to figure out maybe for the penalties that they might have to take. I don't know. So, but right. I'm glad the Astros are out. That's something.
Yeah. Absolutely. Patrick, is there a guy on the Houston roster that you look at, you go, whatever you do, you cannot let this person beat you?
Well, the guy that I always look to previously, they transferred him. So I think that kind of comes back to why Houston has been struggling, especially because, you know, you have a player like Ellis, who left the team, that now you have to kind of rejigger. Darren Quintero was the big signing, and he's always dangerous, but you know he's been inconsistent. So really, when you look at this team, it's I think if they have someone that's going to beat the crew, it will be a surprise. It'll be somebody who's starting to gel, that they're starting to get it, they have the plan coming together, much like Cincinnati. If I think back to any type of game that this reminds me of, it is that Cincinnati game, in that you have a team that is starting to work and fit with a coach. I'm not saying that we're going to see the same result, because this is going to be a drastically different team than that one that was kind of flagging against FCC. So I'm not saying that this is a loss. But, you know, any of the danger that comes out of this is Houston figuring out how they're playing after so many changes, even during the summer.
Well, what strikes me, and we talked about before the Dallas game, how young Dallas is and what a great academy system that they've utilized. You look at this Houston roster, it's really old. They are long in the tooth, and certainly when you have to play this tight schedule that everybody's had to play, that certainly has to factor in. So, I mean, Quintero, you mentioned him, he's 33 years old. Not to me, I'm the last person that should be calling a 33-year-old old, but, you know, in terms of professional sports, this is an older roster. This is a winnable game. This really, I mean, you have to get all the points here against Houston on Saturday, or I think you can forget about trying to get back into that top two, right?
I would agree because Houston, you have full rest. You have your regular week. You have DC United away, which playing away in 2020 is a big challenge. Those are the two games that you really have to circle to really get 6 points. And because you come with Philadelphia and then, you know, it was going to finish off with Atlanta, but, you know, you get a home, two home games back to back, you know, that looks pretty solid, plus a week off. But now you have the Orlando game in Orlando, smack dab in the middle of that. So these are the two games that I think the team really is, you know, the you know, coaches always say take it one game at a time, all that kind of stuff. But if you look at the schedule, you want those 6 points because Philly, they're tough. You know, Atlanta is starting to figure out a few things, and or you know, Orlando City under Oscar, they're a different team than they've ever been within the league in their 6 years now. So it's a different game for them.
Yeah, these next two got to get all the points. So it's. Has anybody had a chance, speaking of DC United, Pipa has gone on to Miami and is playing with his brother. Is anyone, or you're nodding your head, have you seen them play together at all? It's kind of fun.
I haven't gotten a chance to see them play together, but I'll check to see if they've both been slotted into the lineup. So in their last game against Montreal, which they lost 2-1, and Thierry Henry, I think, got manager of the week for getting that victory. It looks like Higuain Federico came on in the 82nd minute. Gonzalo played the whole game, so they did get a chance to play together for 8 minutes in their game against Montreal. And now it's interesting because Inter Miami is kind of the team that people outside who don't follow MLS kind of want to see how they play, because they've got both Higuain's, they have Matuidi, but they're still not a very good squad. I mean, it is their first loss in their last three games because they were on a three-match unbeaten run, and Inter Miami is still within the playoff push. I mean, the only team in the Eastern Conference that's really outside of the playoff picture right now is DC United, because they're 5 points back of Chicago, and Chicago has a game in hand. Cincy, Miami, and Atlanta are all still within that, you know, within that period. Cincinnati is only 4 points behind Chicago, even though Chicago's got that game in hand. It's still possible. It's still possible for any team, but the 7-10 matchup in the playoffs is going to be so interesting. It's probably going to be the Red Bulls against Chicago, Nashville, Atlanta, Miami, or Cincinnati, which is interesting. So that's another potential motivation for Columbus to want to try and push for those top two seeds. You get a much easier matchup if you get to play the Red Bulls, you know, one round in the quarterfinals rather than play New York City, because New York City, I would say, is a better team than the Red Bulls. Or if Red Bulls lose in an upset to Chicago, Nashville, or any of those other teams, that's a little bit of an easier game. But the league is so random this year. It's so unpredictable. Who knows? But I'm sure those guys are happy that they've clinched the playoff spot. I think only for seeding. Just get a home game. That's the biggest thing. Alex has got his hand raised. I know he wants to say something.
I just want to say how incredibly happy I am for Pipa. You know, for a guy like that to get to play with his brother, I mean, the Miami Twitter account posted some videos of the two of them being interviewed and things like that. And it is one of the best things I've seen since this horrible COVID quarantine year began. Just so stoked for him. And honestly, a little bit grateful that he went to DC when he did. I think it would have broke my heart in a way that, yeah, you know, I can't even describe. If he would have been with the crew, then he would have gone and requested a transfer to go to Miami to be with his brother. Like, that would have just been soul crushing. If, like, after all these years of making references to Dos Higuains and stuff like that, you know, crew fans get this close, and then some other team swoops in and takes both of them. So really, really happy for him. He seems like a great guy. I hope he's super happy down there. I hope that he will come back and coach for the crew someday. But until then, you know, cheering him on in Miami, you know, when they're not playing the crew, I hope they win. But it's great to see that for him. I know he seems like he's wanted to play with his brother for a long time. So it's really good to see.
Well, we'll pick our scores for Houston here in a second. But while you have the floor, Alex, you and I also, when we talked on Sunday, talked a little bit about this supporter shield nonsense, for someone who thought he knew how the whole thing worked, and it turns out I didn't know anything, which is not the first time on this podcast. Can you explain for those that don't know how the supporter shield works and why they pulled the plug on it?
So it's anybody's guess why they pulled the plug on it. I think that's kind of the amusing thing about all of this. It sounds like the Supporters Shield Trust, which is their board, which is five dudes basically, were talking about doing this. They had posted something in the supporters. They're basically representatives from all these supporters groups in this group called the ISC. And they had posted saying, hey, we think we're going to do this. Check the Slack channel and see this statement. And nobody checked the Slack channel because nobody ever checks that Slack channel, apparently. And so then they just published it and nobody had any time to actually provide any feedback or try to fight them on it. Why they decided to do this, I don't know. It doesn't sound like they consulted Major League Soccer. Doesn't sound like they consulted the supporters groups. Doesn't sound like they consulted the players. But what they did in practice was they basically completely undermined the legitimacy of the Major League Soccer regular season. They took the regular season and they basically said, hey, I know you guys have been, you know, playing this game during the middle of a global pandemic and risking your health for our entertainment. But by the way, we're not going to reward you a supporter shield because the fans are watching from home this year. That was their justification, was, well, there aren't fans in the stands. First of all,
that's absurd.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're in the stands or not. It makes it sound like the only fans who matter are the fans who are at the game. And if you're, you know, if I moved to New York, I'm somehow a worse Crew fan because I can't sit in Nordica anymore. The whole thing is completely absurd. It sounds like they're slowly walking it back at this point. But really what they've done is they've really jeopardized the future of the Shield. Because I think now, you know, they, Major League Soccer, it seems like, had no idea this announcement was coming down. It sounds like, you know, they had to kind of scramble to get a statement out. And I would not be surprised if Major League Soccer tries to take over this, like they've taken over every other aspect of the game in America. And so the people who are literally the board supposed to be entrusted with this supporters led trophy have essentially, you know, risked it to a degree where it might die this season. So absolutely ridiculous. Gives me flashbacks to 2015 when they had the Dos Aceros? Was it 2013? I can't remember anymore. But when Seattle tried to bring Capos into Columbus and a bunch of people were in a warehouse trying to paint TIFO. And
2013.
It was 2013, yeah. And you know, a bunch of people had to walk away from the TIFO painting to go hop on a conference call where they were basically told by a bunch of Seattle Sounders supporters that, oh, by the way, we're having Capos. And, oh, by the way, the Capos are going to be us. And, oh, by the way, we're running this entire show in Columbus. So it's very much like this, you know, out-of-touch people who think that they're kings of soccer coming in and making a stupid decision and then having to walk it back once they realize how stupid it is. So
yeah, I mean, you know. I didn't know any of this. Why is a... You know, I'm a fan, you know, I'm Joe fan. Yep. Patrick, why should there be this unaccountable board that runs this thing? As a fan, I go, it seemed pretty simple to me. If you have the best record in the league, you win the supporter shield. What is all this political garbage?
Well, it's history, frankly. So in the early days of MLS, you know, the regular season champ was the regular season champ. They got the best seed in the playoff in their conference, kind of like what's going to happen this year.
I get that.
Which is great.
Yeah, of course.
But the early vibrancy of supporter culture in Major League Soccer, the lasting effect of that is the genesis of the Supporter Shield. The group of fans said, you know what? The best record in the regular season, and for those of you who didn't follow MLS back in the turn of last century, you had all the 10 teams, you know, you played each other as much as we played Cincinnati this year, and they decided that the best regular season record got the shield.
I'm fine with that. Don't misunderstand me. I like the entire concept of the supporter shield. I just I had no idea that there were five people that were in charge of the thing, and they could just say, "Yeah, we're not doing it." I guess that's my point.
So I guess that from the genesis, this great genesis is that somebody has to run it, and you know, there's always issues about how it's handed off, and then we have a new trophy because we had the wedge, whatever, kind of this abstract looking shield that weighed about 150 pounds, and eventually this supporters collective, this board decides to have something that looks nicer. It's a nice shield. But yeah, all of a sudden, just because no one picks up the phone, they're like, no, let's not do it. It's frankly crazy.
Well, it's a bunch of supporters from teams who are not in the running for the shield. That's the other really amusing about this. Yeah. Like, you look at who the representatives are.
They shouldn't like put FCC. They shouldn't put FCC fans on the board.
I know. You know,
it's just also peculiar that the decision's coming in middle of October with six games left in the season.
Right.
Why?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And as a fan, I didn't for one moment, as to Alex's point. Well, yeah, I haven't been in the stadium. I miss it like hell. Trying to be careful. Trying to look after people around me. So I'm being very cautious. So I'm not there. But other than when I threw a fit and walked away from the Cincinnati game, I'm watching every minute of every match. So to be told that, you know, you might as well turn off the TV if you're not here and go do something else because it's meaningless. Well, I'll tell you what, the players have busted their asses to make this season possible and putting their health in jeopardy so that we can watch our favorite teams. And I've been very appreciative of the whole effort. If anything, in my mind, the supporter shield means more this year than any other year. How about
Agreed.
That?
Yeah,
absolutely.
No, completely.
100%. These guys are playing two games a week in a COVID environment, and they want to try to award less trophies because they think that this is somehow less of a season. It's the most ridiculous and short-sighted thing I can remember. And, you know, I do think, you know, you talk about this small group of people who have all this power that nobody really wanted to give them. And they're making these calls for, you know, US soccer as a whole. You know, we've run into this problem with American Outlaws. We've run into this problem with this group now. It's a problem in US soccer. And, you know, I'm glad that this is kind of waking everybody up to it, because going forward, there are going to have to be structural changes to the way that this trophy exists and the way it's managed. Because you can't have people saying, oh, well, some years we'll award it, other years we won't. That's not how it works. If there's a season,
it's the simplest damn thing in the world. If you have the most points, you win the shield.
Yeah.
There couldn't be anything more clear.
Yeah, it's not. There's not
this,
like,
how is this a problem?
Yeah, it literally makes no sense to me. It's
no.
You give it to the team that's got the most points at the end of the season. There is a season. There are points, and so when the season's over, who's at the top with the most points, they get the shield. It's not rocket science. It's not, you know, any, it's so straightforward. So
isn't the first time that we've had a season that was unusual, that didn't look like it was at the beginning. You know, 2001, the season ended in the middle of September.
Yeah.
So I look at this and share Alex's sentiment that, you know, coming out of this, there's going to be a lot of focus on how this happened. The fact that, oh, not all the teams are playing each other the same amount of times. It's like, heck, look at 1996 through 2005. That's what MLS looked like. But, you know, so looking at the maybe the positives coming out of this, like I look at the injury woes for the Crew and saying, hey, Pedro Santos really coming through again, or Aiden Morris is kind of a big shining bright spot in his rookie year. I'm looking at this and saying, people are going to pay attention. All of a sudden, the way the supporter shield is handled is in a bright focus. People are going to take a look at it. People are going to pay attention. And gosh, I have to think that there's going to be improvements on who and how this gets done.
Yeah. And I just want to say one thing before we get to the picks, because to me, and I agree to your point, Brian, that if anything, this is a year where a supporter shield means even more, because the supporters haven't had the opportunity to support their teams nearly as much, and they have to do it in ways that are so unique and different in the midst of an unprecedented time in our lives. And for MLS, you have to think of what these players have been through. They find out that their season stops after two games. They got to figure out a way to work out from their homes. And then they make this decision to have a tournament for a month away from their families, the sacrifice, making that decision to go into that bubble in Orlando. You had teams that had to drop out because they got COVID. And then you see what they've been going through throughout this entire regular season in the resumption. All these, they have to be tested every single day. You know, that's tough. And the training, the condensed schedule, the sacrifices these players have made, this is no doubt the hardest season in MLS history for so many reasons. The amount of factors that are coming into that, with less fans, having to get tested for a virus every day, the training, the schedule, the sacrifices they made in not seeing their families. You know, you have to applaud the players and the supporters for everything that they've done in order for this season to happen. And ultimately, this season will finish with a champion and an MLS Cup winner. You might as well have a supporter shield winner.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it.
It's like these days, certain kinds of people decide that they just want to die on every mountain. And this is not a mountain to die on. Just award the damn shield. I didn't for one moment think that we shouldn't, and I doubt anybody else did either. It was just these five people sitting around. Who knows where they meet and decide this, but it's the goofiest thing I've ever seen. So hopefully they'll walk it back, because there's no point to it. Just give the supporter shield. And it's not going to be us, I don't think. So it's not that. Hey, oh, hell, Toronto could win it, and I hate them. But let's just keep this going. All right, sorry. That really has stuck in my craw the last couple of days. Thank you for letting me vent. Now you know what my wife goes through. All right, let's pick the Houston game and get out of here on themassreport.com. By the way, like and subscribe and comment and leave only positive comments, because, as I've said before, we all have very low self-esteem here, so. Or maybe just me. So give us the likes, give us the comments, help do whatever that does. We appreciate it. I'm going to start with you, Patrick, since we haven't seen you in a while. Give us a score for the Houston match.
I know I said that this game reminds me of the FCC game. I don't think it's going to be a loss. I see this as 2-0 Crew. Players getting healthy. Starting to look like the team they were in the summer, and giving some Crew fans something to look forward to.
Very good. 2-0 for Patrick. Corey.
In honor of Bart, 15-0. No. For real, 3. I think 3-0. This team's getting healthier. They got a chance to relax. They got a confidence boost with a big win against New York City. I think they're going to come out fast out of the gates again against Houston. To say that correctly, and we'll win 3-0. They played these guys in February in a preseason friendly. They won 4-0. You know, preseason equals regular season. 3-0. It should be a win, and then you'd expect them to go and beat DC until Philly, Orlando, Atlanta. That's a tough way to end the season.
Good enough. 3-0. I like it. Alex, do you have to know who the center referee is before you're going to make your pick, or are you just going to make it?
I'm just gonna make it. I don't think the fix is in this game, even though I think I'll be correct on that one, just like I was in the Cincy game. I think it's going to be 2-1 Crew, and my other half of my prediction is I think that the Supporter Shield Foundation will walk back their decision, and they will keep the replies turned off on their tweets, like the cowards that they are, for weeks, possibly months. So nobody can laugh at them for making such a dumb decision.
All right, very good. You know, I look at that Chicago score line of last month, Chicago and Houston. I don't have a whole lot of respect for the Chicago team. I like us to go down there and get a result pretty easily. I'm going to say 4-0. If they can do it, we can do it. 4-0 in Houston on Saturday. All right, fellas, I'm gone next week. So I don't know. I'll try to carry on without me. I'm sure somehow you'll figure it out. I have my ESPN Plus, so I know I can at least watch the Houston match while I'm gone. And of course, I'll try to figure out how to watch DC United as well. So I'll be with you in spirit. It's not good enough for the Supporters Shield Foundation, but it's good enough for us here in the Mass Report podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Check out all the great crew material that we have for you, the great coverage at massreport.com. And until next time, thanks for listening.